Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Brett Ewing. How you doing, my friend?
Doing well. Nice to see you again, Thomas.
Good. Yeah, nice to see you again. For everyone listening, me and Brett have just been talking of trips to the UK, trips to London, and red teaming till New Year's Day, was it, mate?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Listen, I can think of worse things to be doing over the holidays. I'm glad you got some break, but I'm sure you were having fun in the meantime anyway. Cool. All right, Brett. For everyone listening that doesn't know who you are, mate, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. Very busy man. Hack Dayton, you are the founder. SCI, Strong Crypto Innovations, is a company that you also run. And Axe AI, you are the CEO of that company as well. So, yeah, a lot going on. As you mentioned before we hit record, wearing many hats. So it'd be nice to hear what's going down. It sounds like there's plenty. But, yeah, I'll start where I always start, which is who are you? What do you get up to? What's going on?
Yeah, so my name is Brett Ewing, and like you said, I run a few different companies or helped found a few. It all started off with I had a professor that was the head of cybersecurity for Sinclair Community College. And I took an interest in offensive security. And there isn't a lot of offensive security in formal education, unfortunately. But he introduced me to one of the OG hackers of the day, which was a man named Alexander Fry. I think he's one of the first 150 GIAC security experts, or GSEs, which is effectively the creme de la creme for offensive security certs. And we got together and started doing, he upskilled me in pen testing and the dark arts of red teaming. And originally he was just one man banding a company with a number of contractors and such. And I came on and became the second salaried individual. And yesterday, I think we hired our 35th person, and that's 5 years later. So we went from 2 to 35 in about 5 years, which is okay. Pretty good growth.
Yeah.
And I started out, one of the things that I think helped get me the job in the beginning was I was writing a master's thesis called the Offensive Cloud Infrastructure. And my idea was, is if we could automate a lot of the manual and mundane tasks of pen testing, that we could build this system that both automated the tooling and the configuration and the consumption of those outputs and help us write our reports before we writ them. And that was the beginning of my second company, which is Axe AI. And Axe AI is a platform company that is built around our offensive security services company. And right now, that company is just, we got our MVP built over the last 6 months, and now we're looking to release that MVP into the commercial market here in February. And that company, it outgrew me effectively. I said yesterday when we were hiring one of the new guys, I was like, I don't think I'd be able to make it into my own company anymore. Like the level of talent and the kind of degrees and certifications we're getting in, it's really amazing. And effectively, we built our first platform called Shadow Crafter, and it's for offensive security engineers, ethical hackers. So you have your virtual machine, whether it's your Kali Linux, Parrot OS, Arch, whatever you're into, and you can tie it into Shadow Crafter. And as you're conducting your offensive engagements, Shadow Crafter is consuming all the data on the screen. So all the outputs, all the inputs, every command you ran, it's sitting there and it's accumulating the data, populating the dashboard, and writing the report as you go. And we're leveraging LLMs, leveraging RAG and agentic models, and really looking to just really shake up the offensive security industry with it. It's effectively enhanced our individual engineer's capacity by somewhere between 5 and 10x, depending upon how used to the platform the engineer is. And yeah, we've just been really getting busy lately.
No, that sounds wicked, Brett. And everyone's got an opinion on like automation and implementing it into offensive security. And some people love it and some people don't. And perhaps there's a bit of a conversation there that we can get into shortly, which will be interesting. But one thing that I think everyone agrees on, the more we can automate the report writing. I think every single hacker on the planet loves that.
Yeah, it is always the number one bane of existence when you look at those. What's the worst part of your job? Report writing.
Yeah. So I'm on an engagement. I'm on a, I don't know, network, web app engagement, whatever it might be. When I get to the end, so it's writing the report as I go. Is there much that as a pen tester that I would need to do at the end, or is the tool just nail it every time or sometimes, or how does it go down?
Yeah, it's incredibly accurate. And so we actually built it around making sure that we could create, you could generate reports specifically to your target audience. So you can choose, this report is for the executive suite. This report is for the systems administrator. This is for the cloud solutions architect. This is for the help desk that really doesn't need all the details, but they need the, what can I do to help secure the company? And the ability to just generate those reports and have them detailed and spoken at a level that communicates effectively with the end user, that was a huge part of our dev.
Brett, the talk sounds mega, mate. So you get into the end, does this work across every type of engagement or some better than others? Or yeah, how does that work, mate?
Yeah, so you can actually choose as you're inputting. Nice thing, it can consume documents. So if you have your existing SOW, your ROEs, statements of work, rules of engagements, you can just upload the document and the Shattercrafter just populates the rest, adds the name of the company, your point of contacts, your scope, and what type of engagement it is. And we have specific models trained depending upon the engagement. So if it's a vulnerability assessment, there'll be a different model. If it's a red team or an internal pen test or a mobile app test, there are different models specifically trained for both the communication and the tool usage.
Cool. No, I love it. See, I've always said this about AI and automation, that it's just going to make the job more fun. Like from what you're saying, you can put more emphasis on the bits of high value and high stimulation and high fun, like exploiting a certain vulnerability you found or whatever it might be. So I think some people are scared of it, but I think it's actually, whether it's recruitment or pen testing, I honestly think we're going to get to the point where we can just come in and just be highly stimulated all day, every day. And you talked about 5Xing or 10Xing what your guys and girls are doing, but I can really see that because it's removing the bits that none of us like and letting us do the valuable bits, which is ultimately where we get all the sense of purpose and reward from.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of our guiding principles was we wanted our testers focusing on the zero day. We want them working in that unknown so that all the sitting there and explaining how to properly configure your HSTS, it's painful sometimes. Just over and over, making sure that their certificates are signed properly and such. Yeah, it's a bit boring sometimes. But if we, Shadowcrafter gets in there and enumerates, populates, and writes the report on those different kinds of findings so that we're not spending all this time on relatively rudimentary work. And we can really get into those new niche tools that are popping up on GitHub every day and working in those unknown unknowns and finding those new zero days and getting those CVEs attached to your name and, you know, the fun stuff. On the services side, every person we bring on, we enroll in the SANS Institute, and effectively every person that joins our team is making a commitment to make it to GSE, so GIACS Security Expert. Okay. Yeah, we set a high bar, and due to that, we want them really utilizing that high-level skill that we train them to be at and utilizing those non-automatable skills that we really use. That good squishy human brain is actually good for a lot of really interesting, nuanced things. Whereas the automation eye, and another big thing, we're all about augmentation, not replacing. There's always got to be a human in the loop. There's always got to be someone confirming that everything is as it should be. And we don't want to be a horizon AI that is knocking off systems because they've gotten autonomous AI working through your system. We always make sure there's a human in the loop when it's conducting, especially actual exploits or things that could cause disruption to business functions.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so Brett, the bit where it can tailor the report to the client's need, can you tell us a bit more about how it does that?
Yeah, so we already have a lot of history of all these different types of engagements we've had and what's worked best. And we always have a management summary, and then we have our findings and remediations. And we realize that each individual doesn't necessarily need all of the information. So we like that we're building it out now, but our customer portal will eventually become to the point where instead of just having that report, which is the only thing that company gets at the end, and that's the real deliverable, instead of it just being this static PDF, you just log into your customer portal and the document is now living. So the findings we had 6 months ago, if you haven't remediated them, maybe they've gone from low to medium, medium to high. Every day, new vulnerabilities, new 0 days are found. So we want to make sure that our customers, as they're doing the remediations, they understand what is the most critical in that moment, not just what was the most critical 6 months ago, but what's the most critical now.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Individual really has that context. Executives don't need to know how their systems admins are doing the remediation. Maybe the CISO does, but the chief financial officer, CEO may not need that level of detail. So having a report that's specifically for them, that's a high overview with the amount of detail and technical knowledge that they need and not too much. A lot of different sections of the report we notice people skim right over. So let's get rid of the things they're not actually looking at, and let's get to what's really important. Because in the end, it's all about saving time and money.
Yeah. I think especially as you start to climb up that seniority ladder or that C-suite ladder, they just want you to get to the point, don't they? So yeah, definitely. So there's three things going on here. We've got Axe AI, which I presume is what Shadow Crafter comes under. Yeah. And then we've got SCI, then we've got Hackbait. And is there anything else on Axe AI that would be useful for me to be aware of or the listeners to be aware of that you think like pen testers listening could find interesting?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of really cool stuff we're building on that end. The dev branch is getting really interesting. We're developing a number of, so we've got we're building next generation honeypots so that someone cracks your honeypot, we're both analyzing the new tactics that those attackers are using. But the honeypot is actually a LLM that the hackers think they're hacking through a real system. So we're starting to pick up their SOPs, how they attack systems and the different tools they're using, the different AIs they're leveraging. And as they're hacking through our honeypot, they're actually just talking to an LLM that's populating an environment for them. And they're picking up credentials and they're grabbing usernames, and none of it's real. So from one of the things I've always wanted to do that I've always had my customers ask me for, how do I get retribution for these people? How do I, they attack me all day. How do I hit them back? And I can't do that legally, but what I can do is waste their time. And if I can burn up their resources and make them waste their time while I'm also learning how they hack, I can better defend my clients and I can burn up some of their resources. So a little hitting them back a little bit, which is what we want to do. We want to prevent them from attacking, but we also want them to know they could cause themselves harm attacking us.
Cool. It sounds like you've been having a lot of fun with it as well. But how do you like for people? There'll be people listening now that like either want to start their own thing, maybe they want to build a mega tool, or maybe they want to launch more of a traditional kind of consultancy. How do you go from, you mentioned when you were at college learning like the art and craft of red teaming and hacking, how do you actually go from there to building or launching a product or building or launching a business? Yeah, how do you go from A to B or A to wherever you are now?
Yeah, so I do this a lot in Hack Dayton, which is our nonprofit. It's all about applied offensive security. Once a month, I have a meetup. Everybody comes either in person or we also do a live stream. And we're hacking boxes. We're learning new tools, and it's all applied. I don't like to sit and give big speeches and give lectures. I don't really have an interest in being an educator in that capacity, but I like to give hands-on applied experiences. And we've got something we built called the Sticker Heist Challenge with that same Dr. Labasi, at Sinclair, and we won a National Science Foundation grant with it, and we were able to build 30 of these boxes. And I've actually sent you the website, but it's stickerheist.com. Mm. And basically it's this physical box that has both physical defensive measures and several different servers that it populates and its own Wi-Fi. And you hack your way through it. And as you're hacking your way through it, you are finding the codes for the physical locks on it. So you're unlocking it as you go. And I've heard it called, it's like a digital breakout box. You know? Okay. And so you hack your way through it. And at the end, the final safe has stickers inside of it. So it's the Sticker Heist Challenge. And in those monthly meetups, I always bring up like basically how to go from zero to entry level pen tester. Okay. And anyone that's interested in getting in the industry, I always start off CompTIAsec Plus is always your starter. It's relatively straightforward. It's a multiple choice test, but it gives you the base level of security knowledge that you need. It also gives you for America or US citizens, I think it used to be DOD 8570. I can't remember what it's called now, but gives you that first certification that qualifies to work in government security. So I always start them off with the SEC Plus, and from there we get applied. And I like the eLearn Junior Penetration Tester, very affordable, hands-on certification where you learn how to crack passwords, how to do basic web app testing, network testing. And the actual exam is you cracking through, I think, three or five boxes. You also have to pivot through some to find the secret servers and such. I always like to get people started with those two certifications if they're at their base level. SEC Plus, EJPT. And then from there, there's a whole host of different, I know TCM Security's got some good stuff, and it's penetration tester, professional, obviously the offensive security certifications, OSCP and things like that, wherever you can get applied skills. And that's just on the education. To get started in security, odds are you're going to need a base level IT job, whether it's help desk, junior admin, maybe a developer, but just get your foot in the door with some type of IT job and start building those skill sets. And then if you really want to get into red teaming, let's go after those applied certifications in offense, because that's what I need. I don't need you to have a huge understanding of theory, but if you know how to use tools effectively, I can train anybody how to be a red teamer. So really it's about making sure you have applied skills. And also just putting yourself out there, going to the networking events, joining communities, being a part of a CTF team. If your school has a hacking club, anything you can do to get involved with other people in the industry to help guide you and to get those hands-on keyboard skills. Biggest thing I advocate for is actually doing things with your keyboard, learning how the terminal works, learning how Linux commands work, and then learning how the different the standard offensive tools work.
Yeah, cool. But I think that thing of getting to an event or getting involved with the community, I think years ago it was that everyone was doing it, whereas now, unless you actually make a conscious effort, it's so easy just to sit behind a keyboard or sit behind a screen. And if you're further down the line in your career, that's probably okay. You'll probably be fine. But if you are starting out, if you just sit behind a screen, I think that's going to potentially cause some big problems in terms of career growth. So getting out and about is good fun, and it is really important.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's not what you know, it's who you know. If you're able to communicate that you're willing and able and you're committed to developing your skill set, we can take you along the path. It's really easy to take someone who's motivated from zero to a high level engineer relatively. We had an individual on our team that started out with us, had effectively no real security experience, a little bit of IT knowledge. And they went from effectively zero experience to going down the exact path I just laid out, got the SEC Plus, got the EJPT, worked their way through, got their first job with us, junior tester. And also just put yourself out there if you don't have a company you can join necessarily on the offensive, you know, do bug bounties, do something that shows me that you've attempted to learn these skills and tried to apply them. even if you don't find anything, just to hack this company that has a bug bounty program. These are the tools I ran. This is how I went about it. These are the interesting things I found. And you write a report on that, you've now just went to the top of my list because you've actually tried a pen test of someone that just maybe has an IT degree or even a security degree that doesn't have any of that. It's never experienced a pen test before or attempted to write a report. Those kinds of just initiatives really stick out. A lot of our new hires will have a website with a portfolio of, this is the things I did. These are the boxes I was able to get the flags on. These are the, I did some work on, I think it's like maldev.com or something, and did some reverse engineering malware. Just anything that tells me you're actively going out of your way to learn new skills, that's, and you're passionate, that crushes degrees all day.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're helping other people in the community, you're reinforcing your own knowledge, you're building your own personal brand, you're making, I call it making your resume 3D. You're actually building up a GitHub repo or a LinkedIn or a YouTube channel or whatever it might be. It's just win-win, not just for the individual doing it, but for everyone in the community. And I think as well, I don't know how you feel about this, Brett, when you're hiring, but a lot of the assignments or the roles that we've got live at the minute, a lot of my clients are saying, if there isn't some public speaking there, especially at the senior level, if there isn't some public speaking there, or there isn't like a bit of an online presence or genuine, authentic activity in the community, a lot of people are getting to the stage, again, at the senior level, where that's a bit of a showstopper. Like they want to see that kind of involvement in the community. It means that it's almost a non-negotiable, I think, these days.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no. Now that I've held like vCISO positions and things before, and I've organized with all kinds of different CIO, CISO groups, and really those chief positions, those senior positions, really become more about, especially as you know, get to those larger institutions, it's more about being a publicly facing subject matter expert, more so than your actual applied skills. It's about being a person that goes out there and preaches the good word and of security or information technology and is out there trying to, they're not going to be the leader in their AI and ML development, but they are able to have a 15, 30 minute conversation about what these tools are going to look like, what the future of integrating these tools are, and just making sure that you have a publicly facing individual that is out there trying to represent your company and the industry. That's really what those C-suite positions start to become, which I find unfortunate. It's really funny that you spend all this time developing all these skills and getting all these certifications and degrees, and then you end up being a mascot, which is...
Yeah, no, it is. But yeah, no, it's, if you can, let's say, if you can combine those two skills, I think that's where you get dangerous in a good way. If you've got some of the technical skills and can retain some of those as you climb up the leadership ranks and then get the communication and the public speaking and the community piece right as well, I think that's where things can get quite exciting for the individual as well. I think it's a nice balance. Brett, you mentioned going from 5 people to 35 people in 5 years, yeah?
Yeah.
How have you found, and I'm asking this for the listeners, I'm actually asking this for myself as well, because we're growing and we're managing people remotely in different time zones in different parts of the world and stuff like that. And it's great fun. It comes with its challenges. There's good days, there's bad days. I'm interested to hear from your perspective. Is there anything you know now about managing a team that you wish you knew earlier? Or have you got any tips and hints or advice for growing a team remotely or expanding or managing folks remotely?
Yeah, I was lucky in that I spent the past 23 years, in grappling sports. School wrestling, collegiate wrestling, jiu-jitsu. And I took a lot of my leadership roles from the coaches I had had over the years and who I felt was most effective at getting the best out of everyone, not just necessarily. I've met coaches that are really good with high-level people. I've met coaches that are really good with low-level people, but not necessarily everyone. And the coaches that were just incredibly adaptable to the individual and really able to just work with people from all different kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of different mentalities, not everyone is waking up at 4:30 in the morning to hit the weights and is that kind of driven individual. Some people start off slow. Maybe they don't even clock in till 10:30, you know, and that's just and that's okay. Warm cup of tea to start off the day. That's the way my wife is. Like she starts it off nice and easy, but she'll work till 8, 9, 10 o'clock. I have other people that 9 to 5 just doesn't click with them. They'll show up just to make sure that like you see their presence, but they're not effective until 11 o'clock till 3 a.m. for some reason. That's where they are just firing on all cylinders and able to deliver. So being able to be really malleable and being able to coach and to guide people at where they are, not where you want them to be or who you want them to be. Yeah. And bringing it back to the sport, there's lots of people that are, they're very creative and talented and flashy, and that's where they feel comfortable. But then you have somebody who's a very just, no, you need to be 100% defense. Everything needs to be very by the book, and you only hit something flashy because it's there or it's a desperation thing. And you try and get one of those coaches to talk to one of those kids, and it's never going to work. And you just have to be really adaptable to who they are and where they're at. And yeah, all my engineers that come in, hackers are all different types, especially the ones at the higher end of the game. They all have really interesting, diverse either personality traits or hobbies. And I try and get more out of that from them than I do trying to be rigorous in their, you know, being an engineer. I'm like, oh, you're into gymnastics. One of my people like breeds snakes. Just it's out there that are really, and if you can connect with your people on who they are more so than just the job, I think that's one of the biggest things for leadership specifically. And also just being really comfortable with people that are smarter than you. I think once you get into a management role, you have to be comfortable both hiring the right people and accepting that those people should be better than you at whatever you're hiring them for. If I'm hiring a web app tester, that's because they're better than I am at web app testing. Developer, AI engineer, whatever it is. I try to be very jack of all trades, and I still show up to CTFs and to the net wars and stuff. And sometimes I do really well, but I don't try and focus on being a great tester anymore. I just try and focus on being malleable to my team and being who my team needs, not who I am necessarily, I guess. Some people, they need sternness, but some people need it very light-handed. And it's actually funny, when you join our team, you make a number of commitments. Like I said, you enroll in SANS, you agree to be getting 2 certs a year at minimum. And with the workload, the education, the certification, it's a lot. And I really, 95% of the people I bring in, I do my best to hold them back a bit, to keep them from burning themselves out, because I know that happens so often in this industry. And I really try and focus. I try my best, but it never works. But please take this holiday weekend off. Genuinely close your laptop, enjoy yourself, just step away. And still, they'll come back Monday morning or whatever, and they'll have this book they read that they need to talk about. They'll have this new tool to integrate. They'll have pushed code. And I'm not asking them to do that. I'm not asking them to work overtime. They do that because they're passionate about it. So as a leader, if you can unleash people's passions, just get out of the way. Like 90% of the time, it's just getting people in the right place and then giving them the environment that makes them happy and then just getting out of their way. There's a company that we've hired a number of their former staff members, and they account for every single minute of your day. And you have to have notes on every like 15 minutes or 30 minutes of your day on what happened. And when I brought them in, they almost didn't know how to function at first, because they were like, what do you mean? I don't have this timesheet to fill out. And when am I reporting to you on the things I've done? And I'm like, we have one weekly stand-up, and then we have different dev sessions and stuff you can be a part of, but I'm not holding roll call on you. I assume I hired you, so you're a functioning adult. If you get your work done and it's up to the par that we expect, go fishing. I don't like whatever you like doing on your spare time. Go do that. You don't need to be sitting in your chair till 5 because you think that's what you need to do. If you're done with your work, go do something else. I'm more than happy with that. And I really try and instill that. And yeah, it's quite funny when some of those more strict, especially like DOD-based people come in and they're just like, what do you mean? You just expect me to be in the hole? I've never had this kind of experience. I'm like, you can deliver, buddy. I'm not going to hold. I'll hold your hand as much as you need, but I'm not going to be overbearing or on top of you or micromanaging. All that stuff is out the window. On every single one of my team, we don't have anything but engineers. Everything else is third party, whether it's HR, legal, accounting, all that stuff. We just have engineers. And we have leaders that assist in making sure the final product is up to par. But there's nobody trying to hassle you over your exact timesheet and things like that. I see it as a waste of time. There's a lot of old management thinking that we just don't incorporate. One of the things me and Alex started building SCI is all we wanted to do was be a company we wanted to work for. And we didn't know exactly what we wanted to become, but we know what we didn't want to become. We didn't want to be this overbearing corporate structure. We have a number of different like slogans. Just say yes, which is basically if there's a new opportunity we throw out there. One of our first employees was like, just keep saying yes to the new hires. Just say yes because it just keeps getting better. life just keeps getting better. I've never had to ask for a raise. They've brought it to me before I even asked for it. I've never had to ask for an expansion of my abilities or authority. Or if it makes sense, we integrate it. Very simple. We try not to waste too much time. If you have good ideas, rise to the top. And if it works, if it doesn't, it's very dispassionate in that way. Mm. And it seems to work incredibly well. And we also are very happy to take critiques and new ways of doing things from some of our newest engineers. We actually, just before I got in here, we have a weekly cross training. And today's was by our youngest member. She's 21 years old and absolute phenomenal hacker. And she wants to integrate this new tool. She showed us the new tool, how it works, how we can integrate it, what it costs. Done. No problem. Let's add it on. Now it's part of the workflow. That's how easy it is. No deliberating with a bunch of mid-level managers on whether or not we can do this. If it makes sense and if it makes technical and financial sense, it works. Let's go. And yeah, we're also like our whole executive class is not afraid to be wrong, which I think is something sometimes different from other organizations. And yeah, I like to be the least intelligent person in the room. And I like to let everybody do what they want to do because I hired them for a reason.
Yeah, it's cool. But that way of running the team and managing people, it's, I think, reverse psychology, the wrong word, but we have it on our team where we're like, at Christmas, we were like, look, please, you don't need to do anything. And people would come in and do stuff. And it's almost like if you do check this, check that, do that, I think that's when people almost want to find a way to beat the system or do less or just leave. Whereas if you go, nah, it's fine, you'd be surprised people will do things of their own accord. I've heard companies that are hybrid where they make it optional for people to come in on certain days. They don't say they have to. And they make it optional and also fun and stuff like that. People just tend to want to come in. Whereas if you operate in that draconian manner, people can go the other way. So there must be some science behind it or some psychological science behind it, which is a bit beyond me. But it seems to be a good way to run the show, I think.
Yeah, I really think if you're passionate about what you're doing, what your work is, you'll work yourself to the bone, not because your employer was over top of you, but because that's what you want to do. Yeah. If you're passionate about what you're doing, you'll put in the extra hours because that's what you want to be doing. Those are your goals. Definitely. That's actually one of the things I always tell to my new hires is, what do you want to do? What are you interested in? I know we'll bring you as a dev or whatever, or maybe a junior tester, but if you're interested in developing or you got some cool projects in the background, let's throw you in the dev team. Yeah, if that's what you're passionate about, let's get what you're passionate about. Yeah. Or some of our new interns were paying for their certs and stuff. And they were like, well, what certs will you pay for? What do you want to do? What are you interested in? Obviously it should align with the company's goals. Like, I'm not going to pay for you to learn how to be a deep sea fisherman. If it has to do with offensive security or development, yeah, let's go for it. What do you want to do?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, mate. Just going back slightly, mate, do you still do jiu-jitsu, or is that a thing of the past now?
Oh, yeah.
Cool. I've always fancied, but I just wish, I suppose it's never too late, but I think my excuse is always, if I'd started it earlier, I'd have really got into it, but maybe I should just stop with that excuse and actually just try and get into it myself, because it looks fun and probably a good way to switch off.
Oh, yeah. No, I love it. I don't say all my team members should like do jiu-jitsu or boxing or anything like that, but I try to advocate that they all do something physical, whether it's yoga or mixed martial arts, whatever it is, I think you should do something to focus on the body. And if there's some kind of quote that's, if you treat the body rigorously, the mind will obey, kind of thing. Get that exercise out, and then your mind's able to focus on the things you need to focus on. Instead, I think one of the things they call is like the monkey mind. The monkey just wants to climb to the top of the tree and back down. Top of the tree, back down. And if you just get that out of you, maybe it's the beginning of the day, the end of the day, but if you get that monkey mind out of you, then you can focus on the real things you want to do.
Yeah, it does make a difference. It's that I did this recruitment coaching course, and part of the course was you get one-to-one virtual meetings with the chap that was running this course. And on one session, you just said, when was the last time you actually did something to elevate or enhance your mindset? I think I was having a bad day. And it's got a point. It's just you get so wrapped up in doing this or recruitment or hacking or whatever it might be. But yeah, sometimes you've got to. Fitness is a phenomenal way just to really keep you on track. I think if you're eating your fitness is right, and it sounds so simplistic, but if you're eating your fitness is right and you're looking after your mindset, you almost can't not do well. If you're putting the effort in and doing that, I think you'll always go in the right direction.
Yeah, I always like to stack up both physical accomplishments and intellectual ones simultaneously. Okay. Which sounds like more work that shouldn't be possible to be able to be done, but it's so funny that you're right. If I'm training for an event, that means I had to eat the night before. I had to be well hydrated. I had to get a good night's sleep so I could get to the 6 a.m. training class. And all of those things also help me in my intellectual pursuits. Now I've got the good diet. I'm well hydrated. My mind's working correctly. And I've worked out that monkey mind. And if you want to get involved in jiu-jitsu, I do think it helps a lot. Because I see it as it's speed chess with devastating consequences. Make sure you drop the queen or drop the king fast enough. Otherwise, you might get hurt. But yeah.
Cool. All right, mate. In terms of, I've really enjoyed talking about Shadowcrafter. So is it sold to other businesses, or how do people get hold of it?
Yeah. So right now we've released our MVP we're slowly releasing this. So we've got three solopreneurs that are using it right now. And then we're expanding that to six here in February. And then about June, we're going to start releasing to commercial entities. So we had this really brilliant idea where if we're going to mess up, let's mess up small and then learn lessons so that once we're ready for those bigger commercial entities, we'll have all those pain points worked over. And yeah, it's been working out really well because we have something like 90 different companies on our waiting list right now. Yeah, we're going to be launched at the Cincy Cyber Week, which is a part of the Insert Your City Here AI Week that's going all over the East Coast right now. And we're going to be at a number of those different events. Going to be in Tampa, Austin, Nashville, all the ones in Ohio, which I'm based out of. And we're going to have booths there, demos there, giving fireside chats and things like that on the different stuff we're doing. And you can always go to axe.ai. That's our website. Find out more information. And yeah, we see our commercial product being released in June. And that's right around the time we're looking to do our seed or series A round. We've been able to so far put our money where we just funded ourselves. And we had a fairly large offer last year, but they wanted a controlling ownership. And we said, no, but maybe later. And let's work until we can get ourselves in a position where we have controlling equity in our company and make sure we're guiding the development and the company's future. So many of these companies, especially in the offensive security space, they build a cool product and they've got some great ideas about what they're going to go forward with. Then they bring money in and everything just gets really stagnant. And yeah, I didn't want to be that. That was one of the things I really didn't want to become.
Yeah. No, I'm nodding a lot because I've had a lot of different companies that I've dealt with over the years, and they go through that life cycle and a few different types of money, and you want to take money on the right terms, because if you give up control for the sake of being maybe a bit patient or just biding your time, you could live to regret it, or you could get really frustrated really quickly if you take it on the wrong conditions, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. All right, mate. I normally like to ask guests, it can be a book or a podcast or any content online you're consuming. It doesn't have to be cybersecurity related, but it can be. But any book or pod or anything you've consumed that's made you a better version of yourself or has helped your career growth that could help the listeners?
Yeah, yeah. No, I love this question. So I always start off with The Obstacle is the Way. It's a short read too. I probably read it once every couple of years. And yeah, it's phenomenal in just how to address problems. And I think one of the underpinning ideas is the challenge you're dealing with and the thing that you're scared of, the thing that's obstructing you, or it seems impossible, lean into that. Whatever, I think one of the stories in it is like there's a king basically takes this giant stone, puts it in the middle of the road, and everyone just goes around it. Everyone just walks around it. And finally, somebody, I think it's a kid, decides they're going to move this stone because it's causing so much issue. Everyone has to take this long way around now. And let's solve this problem for the sake of solving this problem. It's a hard problem. It's going to help a lot of people. Let's just solve it. And after they dig it out and they spend all this time, the king put like a big bag of gold underneath that rock. It's that same metaphor, like just sometimes challenges are really difficult and it's constantly obstructing you. And sometimes you just need to tackle that head on and just complete that problem. Even if other people have looked past it or other people are foo-fooing it. Oh, we started ideating for Axe AI, I think December of 20, we won this local pitch competition called Launch Dayton. And a lot of people were telling us not to get into AI. Like, it's going to cost you so much money. Most of the first like venture capital people we talked to, they were saying this is going to cost somewhere between 1 and 5 million just to get a prototype out. It's going to be too hard, too much money, too inexperienced, yada, yada. And they were incredibly wrong. And also we ended up getting our MVP, you know, our prototype out for I think 150K, like on the dot. So the idea, I was like, all right, I don't want to listen to any more venture capital people tell me how much this is going to cost or how difficult this is going to be. Let's just do the thing. And you know what? And worst case scenario, we'll spend some money, but we'll learn a lot about this new burgeoning industry of AI, and we'll upskill ourselves, and that'll be worth it in the end. Even if we completely fail, just the effort and the knowledge we gain will be worth it. And we've gained a lot more than knowledge on this journey, for sure.
Yeah, good, man. I love that attitude. And yeah, I always think that it's like when people say that you can't do something, or they say it's not going to happen, or they do mean it because they're speaking from their own experience and maybe they did struggle, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to. So I love the fact that you cracked on and ignored them. And yeah, man, it's a good attitude to have. And yeah, I think now is like, with like AI and machine learning, and I think this is the time where we're all going to look. This is where it's all happening. Like, this is where regulation can't keep up, or maybe in like the EU it almost can, or whatever. But like, they're struggling to keep up because it's really starting to happen now, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Now we have a little joke inside our dev team where we're talking about, the legality really isn't here with this. Everything's kind of gray. And I was like, listen, guys, if I'm not in an SEC violation in the next couple of years, that's because we did something wrong.
Yeah, you've got to push it. Cool. All right, then, Brett, as we're in January, what's the plan for the rest of the year? It sounds like there's a lot going on. Have you got any kind of main goals that you're focusing on yourself?
Yeah, personally, we've got some exciting stuff coming up. So we're all going to be in Orlando for the Sands. I mean, it used to be called Sands World, but it's just called Sands Orlando now. It's one of the bigger East Coast Sands events. And myself, Alex Fry, and Hitarth Patel are all going to be doing the Red Team Operator Certification course. And all four of us are the executive team for Axe AI. We're really looking to go in and get that coin. It's a really cool coin too. It's got like a ninja with a we're dragging around it. So we're going for that. And we've got, I think, four of our engineers are going for their G-Pen. So we're looking to make a nice little splash there on showing us as one of the top pen testing teams on the East Coast. So that should be really fun. Also, just getting everybody together is always a good time. So we're going to be there. We've got our commercial product coming out in June and likely going to do a big money raise. So that'll be the first and exciting time, I'm sure. But yeah, this year is really going to be a really exciting year. I felt like last year was our breakout year for our services side. We went from, we started the year at maybe 10 or less people, and we ended the year at 20. We doubled ourselves in a year again. And we just keep expanding the contracts and the partnerships and everything and getting into these new niche parts. This year, we're getting into a lot of, we're building out a 5-person industrial control systems team. We're really starting to solidify, build ourselves out into these specialized units and just pushing the envelope. We've got so many incredibly talented and driven people on both the SCI and AXE team. And I used to be able to plan things 6 months, a year in advance. And now everything just moves so quickly. And we just keep hiring new people and getting new contracts. And everything grows so fast that I can't plan more than a month or two ahead because everything changes every time I get out. I thought we'd get our MVP by January. And we completely crushed that goal. All the things the dev side is working on, just next generation, both like agentic approaches and just really building things that bring up not just ourselves, but the industry. And yeah, that's our goal. Really shake things up, really put our mark and let everybody know that we're, we're one of the top teams out there. We've got two GSEs on our staff right now. This year we should end this year with four GSEs. And we've got a whole host of really hungry up-and-comers that are looking to take over and get those high-level certs and really put their name out there and earn CVEs and such. So, yeah, I'm really just excited to see where we end up. And at this point, it's so hard to set a goal with a number, and then we surpass it within a few months. And you're like, oh, well, I guess I got to recalibrate. But I always like to be conservative with what my team members are going to be able to accomplish. But I like to push myself. I always set my goals just a little past what I think is physically possible. And I think that kind of drives me the extra. If I think I can get 3 certs this year, my goal is going to be 4. I want to just push myself just past what I think is really possible. And I think that mentality is permeated throughout the company. And pretty much everyone, like I said, minimum 2 certs a year. Everyone said I want to do 3 at least. So some said 4 or 5. Yeah, I'm really excited to see how everything comes together and how my team grows and how they develop. And like I said, it's hard to keep goals these days.
It's good, mate. It's all good. Listen, Brett, it's nice to see you, man. Thanks for taking the time because I know how busy you are. And yeah, mate, it's all good. And it's going to be a very exciting year ahead. And yeah, do you think we've about covered everything? Do you think we've done a good episode?
Yeah, I think this has been great. Yeah. 1 hour. Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Great to see you, mate. And I'm glad things are going well. And I'll speak to you again soon, mate.
Yes. Thank you so much, Thomas. Looking forward to it. And thank you, viewers.